morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning here on GCN, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you'll listen, your eyes may be opened and you may ultimately change your mind towards some of these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news, my mission each day is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we will engage God on His terms, by way of His one and only covenant, and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Our number here at GCN, if you'd like to question, criticize, or affirm anything I have to say, is 877-376-45. Yes, in the news this morning, we find that Spain is calling France completely bankrupt. Now, it's true. France is completely bankrupt, and France decided that the solution to spending too much and orchestrating a socialist economy is to elect a communist president and exacerbate the problem by spending ever more and by continuing to overregulate the economy. It is everything from the top, nothing from the people. Well, here's the problem. Spain and France, their total debt as a percentage of their gross domestic product is about 90%. Yeah, those are horrible numbers. The EU doesn't want any country to have an accumulation of debts to exceed 60% of their annual gross production. But in the United States, at $16.5 trillion, and growing at over $1 trillion a year, our deficit is already at 110% of gross domestic product. So if Spain and France are completely bankrupt, what do you think the condition is of the United States? But is the United States in total denial, unwilling to acknowledge the fact that it is bankrupt? That the United States is within a number of years of reaching the point where it will become impossible to service its debt. And when the debt can no longer be serviced, the country collapses. I know John McCain. John McCain has been in my home. I've been in John McCain's Washington offices. We've spent a considerable amount of time together one-on-one. John McCain was one time before he ran for president, or at least the first time that he ran against the former governor of the state of Texas, George W. Bush. In that first election, he seemed like the better of the choices. But then when Bush was elected McCain decided, you know, I can't win the Republican nomination without kowtowing to Republican demands. He changed, and he became amongst the most shrill and obnoxious voices in Washington. And now what John McCain is saying, that Republicans need to reconsider their decisions relative to illegal immigration. And if they want to win the votes of Hispanics, what they need to do is provide amnesty to illegal immigrants. Now, that's a heck of a solution to the problem, isn't it? Let's decide a solution that causes the people to vote for us versus voting for the other side. So let's give those who are here illegally what they want, and they will love us and vote for us. That's Washington at its worst. If you want to think twice about illegally coming into this country, the last thing you ought to do is provide amnesty to all of those who have, and to continue to do so as a regular pattern. All that says is, come on in. Yeah, you'll be illegal for a while, but after you've been here for a while, we will give you full status as a citizen. You can vote for the politician that will give the next generation even greater access to welfare and to Medicare and to food stamps and to education and to every other benefit, and won't even have to pay for it. Is this a great country or what? Last week, we were told by the Defense Department that women were now qualified to engage in combat and that women could be included in combat without lowering the physical standards. Now, I have no problem whatsoever in allowing women to fight in the military. If you want to go and play G.I. Joe or G.I. Jane, have at it. But this problem I do have. If women are qualified to engage in something as physically strenuous as combat, if they're qualified to carry 70 pounds of munitions and other devices on their back while they trudge into combat and are capable of fighting, which is an incredibly physical endeavor, then why do we have different standards for sports in Title IX that says that women ought to have their own teams, that they can't play on a men's basketball team or a men's tennis team or a men's water polo team or a men's lacrosse team? No, we need special teams because we need to give as many scholarships to women, and they aren't qualified to compete effectively for the men's teams. If you need a separate golf team for men and women, and so that women have an equal number of scholarships via Title IX, then how is it that you don't need a special set of physical standards to allow women to play war? We have Larry on the phone calling in from Florida, and Larry is about to talk about the deplorable situation in the Libyan city of Benghazi, but I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Well, I kind of wonder who had a drone there to watch the whole program, who had ordered it, because they did watch that, and he had had a meeting hour before a Turkish ambassador left. I think he was making his deal, running guns. The SEALs were told to stand down, but they weren't going to sit there and watch some guy get slaughtered without helping. And they intervened when, you know, basically Obama said not to him. From what I read on Drudge, Obama watched a couple hours of it and said, "I'm tired and going to bed," and it even shocked his staff.
Yeah, my understanding is that that in the Senate hearing to determine what happened and why, Secretary of State, departing Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton, said it doesn't matter.
Matter.
Who did it? And how can it matter if the Secretary of State of the United States tells you it doesn't matter, Larry? How can it matter? I mean, she would tell you the truth, right?
Are any of these people? See, there was a time not too many years ago that just the threat of impeachment would make a president leave, i.e., Richard Nixon. Because he what? He lied. Okay? Now, what do we have here? We've got a situation where they've taken, the art of lying to another level. And
here's the situation.
Comes out of their mouths a lie, and we all know it, too.
Yeah. Whether or not it's true that the United States had foreknowledge of the attack, and specifically decided to forego defending our ambassador or not. What we do know for absolute certain is that the President of the United States knew, as did the Secretary of State, before the attack had even killed the staff in our embassy in Libya, that the attack was being perpetrated by a Islamic organization called Ansar Sharia.
Yeah, that's right. They knew it, and then he went out and blamed it on a film, and some filmmaker went to jail for breaking his probation or something, and he's the only guy in jail. But the people that are responsible for this are not in jail.
But think about that. Ansar Sharia means friends of Sharia law. The people who perpetrated this, who planned it, are fundamentalist Muslims. The weapons that they used were supplied by the United States. We sent the weapons to the jihadists that overthrew Muammar Gaddafi through Qatar into Libya, and so the weapons that we provided killed the American ambassador and members of his staff. And
from what I understand, the ambassador that was procuring the weapons for Ansar Sharia, and they used his own weapons against him. That's right. And so, I have to ask, how was he an ambassador? You know, how do you have an embassy that doesn't even have a web page?
Yeah, I mean, well, let's go further here. Go further here. So, an American ambassador was killed by the Mujahideen, the jihadist that the United States was arming. The jihadists that killed him and planned the attack were fundamentalist Muslims that couldn't be more fundamentalist than friends of Sharia law.
Right.
And the United States, knowing that this is what happened, chose instead to blame the extremism of a Copt Christian movie on Muhammad for having caused the event, and did so before the United Nations, did so in the immediate aftermath, and did so for weeks after, and have never come out and said, we lied to the American people. Now, think about how serious that is. What that means...
That's totally treacherous. It's traitorous. It's
an impeachable event. It's an impeachable event to have authorized, which the president did. He personally authorized the shipment of weapons into the hands of the Mujahideen in Libya. The very Mujahideen. These organizations were all run by the very Mujahideen that America first aided in Afghanistan and then went to war with in Afghanistan. Exactly the same people that America supplied weapons to its enemies, and that those weapons were deployed on Americans killing them. And the President of the United States, rather than apologizing and saying, I'm the one that supplied those weapons, I made a mistake, I supplied them to the wrong people, and they ended up killing an American, I'm so very sorry, I made a mistake, we need to reconsider what we're doing in the Islamic world, he instead lied. And he tried to cover up his malfeasance by saying that the crime was committed because of a Copt Christian extremist who created an accurate, although poorly produced, movie on Muhammad.
Well, yeah. Not only that, but they're moving forward with arming Egypt. With giving them more planes.
Well,
now, why would you give the Muslim Brotherhood more planes?
More weaponry.
What is going on at our upper levels of government here? What's going on?
What weapons are being deployed in Mali? It's the weapons that we supplied to Libya. What weapons were used to kill so many in the Algerian fuel depot? I am Yada. We're here with Larry. And this is Shattering Myths. This is an extremely important subject. Stay with us through the break.
Good day.
Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. During the break, Scott and I were talking about Title IX, and it is my conclusion that Title IX is one of the most counterproductive and disruptive things that America has ever done. For those who are not aware of Title IX, what it says is that every university must give as many athletic scholarships to women as it provides to men. And what it does not recognize is two things. One is that there's only two sports, men's football and men's basketball, which, by the way, aren't men's football and basketball. They're just basketball and football. If a woman is qualified, she can play. Produce the money that supports all of the other sports. All the rest of the sports are financial losers. And it also does not take into account that rather than producing equality, what it did is produce inequality. Now, at the average university, more than two-thirds of the enrollees are women, and men are less than one-third of the enrollees at most major universities. And so we have fundamentally changed our nation in terms of the roles of men and women as a direct result of this.
And then you also tie in that you were talking about women being allowed in combat now. Which, if they can qualify and they pass the same test that guys have to pass with no toning it down or anything like that, I'm fine with that. But then do they also have to sign up for selective service? I mean, that's something that I had to do when I turned 18. If I don't sign up for that, I'm breaking the law.
There's been no discussion on that whatsoever, which tells you no. Again, we have a society that is purely hypocritical. You know, it's
and it really is. It's meant to create equality, but what it's done is it's given them a better advantage than me. I can't go play on the women's golf team.
Right.
Which, if I could, I mean, I'd probably be a far better golfer. I mean, you put me 50 yards closer to the hole, and I might hit the fairway, you know, a little bit more. I think the concept behind Title IX was I like it somewhat because I have two sisters and things like that, and I'm glad that they have, you know, they have some advantages. But at the same time, it's now created such an uneven playing field.
It removes the idea of competition, and it removes the idea of fairness. You know, it's I've watched women's basketball. It isn't anywhere close to the same athletic endeavor as is men's basketball. And so you ought not be providing scholarships. I don't have a problem if women want to play on a basketball team. I've got no issue with that.
Well, but
don't provide scholarships. It's a loser to the university, not something that's a benefit.
Well, the very object of all these things was really to break down the family, and it was to get women out of the home so there would be two people to tax as opposed to one. And then as an added beneficial thing, you also got to raise the kids to tell them how to think.
Right.
And that's what the women's rights movement was all about. It's not about helping women or loving women or equality. It's about taxes.
It's about taxes, and it's also about getting kids raised outside of the home by in collective facilities.
Destroy the family unit. The family unit. Anti-Torah.
Yeah, but what ended up happening is we destroyed the very fundamentals that were so essential to building our country, and we've been left with a country that no longer makes things and is no longer effective economically, that is a bankrupt country. So there was a direct consequence of this. Just as there's a direct consequence.
You also got to lose the wisdom of grandma and grandpa because you gave them Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security, and you stuck them off to the side and said, we don't have to worry about grandma and grandpa. They got theirs.
Right? We destroyed our morality in the process.
The very fabric that makes a society is the family. And once you destroy the family, you've destroyed the fabric of the society, period.
They did a really good job.
And it was a design.
They did a really good job of taking away, one, self-accountability, responsibility.
Yeah.
And then also they've completely diminished competition. And it's like you said, Yada, competition is something that brings it brings the best out of a lot of people. And if I know I'm going to go to school and I'm just going to keep getting passed on and I don't have to do anything extra hard or I don't have to try any harder than I, you know, than just basic things, and I know I'm going to graduate if I do that, that's not good. You should have something that you have to strive for. And then if you do something where you mess that up, you should have to, there should be consequences for you.
Yeah, and that's what we'll talk about when we come back to Shattering Myths after the break, how our society has now been re-engineered so that success is punished and failure is rewarded. We are taking this full tilt on Shattering Myths. Stay with us after the break. I am your host, Yada, and you can engage in the program by calling 877-300-7645. Shattering Myths. We're talking about the great "it doesn't matter" debate, whether or not it matters if people know the truth, whether or not they understand what happens, or is it that we have entered a time and a culture that evidence and reason no longer matter, that all that matters is that you realize that nothing matters anymore. Don't mind that figure behind the curtain controlling all of the levers. It doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with you.
This really ties into what we were just talking about, though, about the lack of accountability. You brought up Hillary in her Benghazi thing, where she was like, you know, I accept full responsibility. And then immediately when she was questioned about, you know, what happened, the thing that she was claiming responsibility for, she went into a rant of, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, you know. And that's not taking accountability. If you can't,
if you're taking accountability, you've got to say, this is what I did that was wrong. Okay. I made a decision to supply weapons to fundamentalist Muslim Mujahideen who turned the very weapons that we had supplied on our ambassador and killed him. And then I went along with the president's mantra to blame it on a Christian film as opposed to our arming fundamentalist Muslims. And so I'm going to take full responsibility, but when I'm questioned as to what I did that was wrong, I'm going to say it doesn't matter.
And I'm not even sure what full responsibility means anymore. I remember when the Waco incident went down, Janet Reno said, I accept full responsibility. Well, if 54 people are dead or whatever it was, what does full responsibility mean when you just go out and you have your same job and you go to the same lunch and you have the same perks and the same benefits and the same salary?
And look what happens to these people. And look what happened there in that raid of that facility. Do you know why America chose to raid that facility? Because the inside of the compound, they had weapons that that they had a constitutional right to keep and bear, but the United States government wanted to remove those weapons from Koresh and his followers. And it's so the United States government deployed troops in direct conflict with the U.S. Constitution is why we attacked the facility in the first place. Listen, David Koresh was a nutcase. The people who were there should not have been there. Any time you get involved in a religion, you're making a stupid mistake. So,
oh, absolutely.
It's hard to agree on that.
But they had a constitutional right to bear those arms, and yet they were surrounded. And yet we had an attorney general that accepted full responsibility. But what does that mean, I accept full responsibility? I'll tell you, in the home I grew up in, if you accepted full responsibility, hey, you had some payment to make.
Yeah,
payment made.
And you also look at the Koresh and his compound, you have to realize what they were doing is practicing their religion. And if while there were disgusting things that took place in there as it relates to the practicing of their religion, if we have problems with pedophilia and incest and rape, which we ought to, then why do we tolerate Islam in America? Because it favors, it actually promotes these kinds of things. And so it is a it's a complete hypocrisy that we're about. And what I sense is happening, and Libya is such a wonderful example of it, and the story that I was leading into is that Britain said that all British nationals need to leave the Libyan city of Benghazi. Now, if you would think, if we did such a wonderful job, if Britain, France, Italy, the United States, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Sudan did such a wonderful job of supplying weapons to the jihadists in Libya for them to overthrow Muammar Gaddafi, then why
would the British be leaving?
Why, because they were safe in Libya when Muammar Gaddafi is there, and now as a result of us arming the Mujahideen, the fundamentalist Muslims, they're no longer safe. Why is it that we can't take responsibility and say, that was stupid. What we did was wrong. Everything that we have done in the last 4 or 5 years in the Islamic world has turned very bad situations and made them much worse. And that would include 11 years ago with our invasion of Afghanistan. We made a bad situation worse with Iraq. You look at Syria. The problem in Syria today, the fact that a peaceful revolution against a uprising against the government was turned into a civil war that has left close to 100,000 people dead, is a direct result of America invading Iraq and giving Iraq to Iran, so that Iran came to influence not only Iraq, but also Syria and Lebanon. And now the Sunnis, like those are the, who are the dictators of Saudi Arabia, are feeling uncomfortable by the rise of Shia Islam and are using Syria as a proxy war to reassert Sunni Islam over Shia Islam as the dominant form of the religion in the region. and in direct result of the United States. And then the United States is the primary arms supplier that have caused so many to die, and most of the atrocities that are being perpetrated in Syria now, the rapes and the suicide bombings, are being perpetrated by the very people that the United States is aiding and abetting. When are we ever going to accept responsibility and say, what we're doing is wrong? We're making a mess of the world.
Yada, you can't honestly believe, and I don't honestly believe, that the average American gets up every day and says, I'm going to go to work because I want a certain percentage of my labor donated to this particular Islamic cause to arm them. I don't believe that. And so then we have to look, if what I'm thinking is true here, and I'm pretty sure it's true, we have to ask, how is it that our leaders can pretend to represent us because they no longer represent America? I don't believe they do for a moment.
I think they do. And this is where I would differ. Yeah, absolutely. Let me tell you why I think they do.
They
don't, but they represent the majority of Americans. The majority of Americans voted to reelect the man who had decided to arm the Libyan Mujahideen. Whose weapons were used to kill the American ambassador, and who lied about it to conduct a war against fundamental Christianity, which he labeled as the cause of the war, and yet what should have been an impeachable event, as well as undermine the American people and adding $6 trillion to our debt in the first 4 years of his administration. This man who mismangled the economy was reelected by the majority of Americans. And so,
Americans, 25%, half the people
it doesn't matter. Of the people who voted, the majority of those who voted
25%.
You can't, because it's the majority of those who voted for a continuation of those very things that are destructive. We are responsible.
That's not the majority of Americans. It is 25% of the people that are still stuck in the left-right paradigm. You and I, as an example, didn't vote. We didn't vote for a reason, because somebody's not going to say to Yada, would you like hemlock or would you like cyanide? Because he's going to say, I prefer neither, you know, and I'm going to say the same thing. So
I think the majority of people,
I think
if you were to take a poll of Americans, whether they vote or don't vote, you would find the same favoritism towards the socialist leader that is willing to take money away from those who have earned it to give it to those who have not. The same thing that we were talking about in Title IX. We are punishing success and we are rewarding failure. And as a result, the country is bankrupt. And it is getting worse in a hurry.
I'm not going to accuse. You know, I did work for the Gallup organization for six years. I know something appalling, but I have to tell you this. I am not going to accuse the American electorate of brilliance. Even being informed, I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
I know better.
And that's right. And that's where we really get into the crux of the problem. Because for the last 50 years to maybe more, schools have been taken over by the teachers' unions who have an agenda, and their agenda is to make sure that the only thing that matters is that it doesn't matter. They wish to indoctrinate young people so that they no longer think, so that they no longer understand, so they no longer exercise good judgment. Exercising good judgment and being discriminating, coming to understand so that you can make wise decisions, is the very enemy of political correctness. And so America has now adopted a national religion called socialist secular humanism. It's imposed on our children, and we have bred now people who no longer think, who seem to be incapable of thinking, who cannot exercise moral judgment, and therefore the average American today is incapable and unwilling to make a sane decision.
How do you do all that and still make a difference?
I mean, how do you actually do something that is worthwhile when you have been told that when you compete in school that the answer doesn't matter, that 2 + 2 can be 3 or 5, whatever you'd like it to be. You've been raised in sports where no one keeps score, and now you're in an economy where deficit spending ourselves into oblivion. And the numbers don't add up. Nothing seems to matter. We're arming and equipping the people that are killing us, and we're saying it doesn't matter. We have an entire society that has been raised to think in accord with political correctness that it doesn't matter. University of Virginia had an
agreement for me. I agree with that, but you've got a situation where they use incrementalism, too. You know, I mean, it starts out, okay, here we've got a guy that lied. We're going to impeach him. Okay, great. He was a CFR member. I'm glad to see you go, Dick. Then the next guy that they bring in is, I don't even know what he was about, Ford. Then the next guy, Carter, the bar gets lowered a little more. You know, he was a guy.
Let's not let Ford off the hook, because what Ford did is with Henry Kissinger, he's the guy that supplied Adams for peace. He's the guy that decided that the intelligent thing for us to do is to build a nuclear reactor in Iran. And the very nuclear reactor that Iran is using to develop its nuclear program was built by America under the Jerry Ford administration. Does it matter?
I don't even know
darn
that,
right.
But it doesn't surprise me, because Ford's...
Does it matter? Yes, it matters. And then we'll turn to Jimmy Carter and whether or not it matters that he created Al-Qaeda, the very enemy now that we say we're at war against. Come back to the final news segment of Shattering Myths. We're talking about whether or not it matters, and we were going through the presidents since Nixon. We had Carter, and does it matter that Carter, through Zbigniew Brzezinski, created Al-Qaeda, armed them, provided $5 billion worth of weapons to Al-Qaeda so that they could fight the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan and later turn on us? It does it matter that Ronald Reagan said that he was the champion of conservatism and of small government, and yet he exacerbated the avalanche of debt that is now consuming us? Does it matter that George Bush, King George the First, told America that it was our duty to go and push Saddam Hussein, who was a secular leader, out of Kuwait so that he did not invade Saudi Arabia, when America and the world would have been better off if Saddam Hussein, a secularist, had control of Saudi Arabia and Kuwait as opposed to the Muslims? Governments in those countries who are supplying most of the fuel and weapons to Islamic terrorists? Does it matter? Does it matter that Bill Clinton engaged in a war killing Serbs who had been butchered under the Muslims in Croatia so that he could direct attention away from his illicit affair in the White House? Does it matter that he clearly lied under oath and purged himself and yet was not held accountable for lying to the American people, setting a precedent? Does it matter that King George II, who called himself a compassionate conservative, inherited a $250 billion budget surplus and turned it into a $1.5 trillion deficit? Does it matter? Does it matter that Obama said that he was going to bring in change and do everything differently, and yet all he has done is exacerbate the very problems that have caused us to be in this mess? Does it matter?
Clearly all these things matter, because we're in the situation we're in today, which is a very bleak situation, both economically and militarily.
Correct.
I mean, it matters immensely. They've basically eviscerated the world.
Yes.
I understand
and
what they've done. And, you know, we sit back and talk about how we're bringing democracy to the world.
Yeah. And think about this. We'd be We'd be better off without our military. Our military has become so expensive, we outspend the rest of the world combined, that it's bankrupting the country. As a matter of fact, if we were to simply honor the Second Amendment and allow Americans without restrictions to bear and keep arms, then there was no country in the world that could invade America. It would be that simple. You don't need a military. Our military is no longer involved in the defense business. They're
no, it's
strictly
the offense business.
Right.
I understand that.
And we're manufacturing enemies around the world as opposed to keeping America safe. What we did
Absolutely.
With our military in Afghanistan was suicidal. What we did with our military in Iraq was suicidal. In both places, we made bad situations worse. It does matter. And it's long past time that Americans recognize that it matters, because we continue as Americans to elect leaders who are doing things that are counterproductive.
There's a line that says you reap what you sow, and eventually, you know, I don't want to reap this. I'm against it.
The majority of Americans want government to continue the entitlements, and they want to tax those who are the most successful evermore, so that they continue to have their entitlements.
Operates on coveting what other people own, right? I mean, isn't that what it's about now? You covet what other people own and other people have?
So then what
happens? That's a heck of a way to run your life.
Yada, happens when the money runs out? I mean, eventually the people with money aren't gonna stand for paying for everybody else.
Yeah, the money has run out. Well, you know, the book Atlas Shrugged is all about the productive saying, you know, it's just not worth it anymore. Phil Mickelson, the golfer, saying, you know, I've got to make some decisions because now more than 2/3 of what I earn is confiscated by the state or the federal government. And finally, Atlas Shrugged, and it says, you know, it's no longer beneficial for me to work so that my money can be taken and given to those who have not earned it in a manner that I do not support. And ultimately, it all collapses. But worse than that, we're not just redistributing wealth as if that were a collective good. We're bankrupting our children by deficit financing, by spending vastly more than we're taking in, essentially running the country into bankruptcy. And the answer to your question is, we are at the verge of being unable to service our debt, at which point there will be utter chaos and anarchy in this country. I'm Yada, this is Shattering Myths. We'll be back after a moment.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy.